I don't know if it can get any crazier, but if it can, it'll happen on the left coast, where the People's Republics of California, Washington, Oregon are imposing draconian measures. Number one, to keep a lot of us out of work, and number two, to keep a lot of us out of the woods and the fields. But this is Scott Linden, and this is the Upland Nation podcast, where we're going to try and keep it positive. In fact, we're going to look downrange in this week's podcast toward next season and where you want to go. Yeah, we're going to talk about your favorite states and why they're your favorites. Got a long list of callers ready to go. Start cogitating on that topic. Because if we don't look downstream and look toward the positive, I don't know about you, but my head's going to explode. So glad you could join me. You got your notebook and pencil and make some notes if you're planning for next season already. We're here in the Cabela's podcast studio, where we'll also talk about public access, some hunting strategies and dog handling tips, and a little bit of everything else right here on the Upland Nation podcast. Hope you are, well, I don't know what to call it, making the best of the situation. We're under house arrest here. You can't even travel to relax. You know, the old Sunday drive thing? Even that's against the law now here in Oregon. But luckily, and maybe I shouldn't say this too loud, but I can still walk out the back gate onto the National Forest and walk around with my dog. They haven't closed that yet. They've closed the campgrounds. They've closed the RV parks, but you can still get a growler full of great craft beer here in Central Oregon. Okay, well, maybe you saw my article on the three favorite states that I put at the top of the list. We'll be talking more about all of those, but in the meanwhile, if you want to click over to that while you're listening, it's at findbirdhuntingspots.com. I'll be elaborating a little bit later in the program, but right now, thank you to a couple sponsors who make this all possible. Number one on the list, Sage and Breaker. They've been with me since the very beginning. Gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. Learn a little bit about how to take care of your own guns by watching the videos at Sage and Breaker. And I would be very flattered if you would read one or two of my blog posts over there as well. You never know. You might learn something from one or the other or both. And Dogtra, our collar sponsor, where I guess I can't say enough good about the T&B Dual. One handheld transmitter controls two dog collars, two sets of parallel buttons, so you don't have to toggle back and forth. You can keep your gloves on and still actually control your dogs. So, well, it's one of those things you can learn more about, as well as all of the sales and bundles going on right now. Learn more at dogtra.com. And as I promised, I'll elaborate a little bit first on my top three bird hunting states. Full disclosure, I've been the guest of governors in all three of them. They've been kind to me, but so have all the people I've hunted with, visited with, stayed with, dined with, had a beer or 10 with. They are, in no particular order, South Dakota, Kansas, and Montana. Wonderful places for all sorts of reasons, especially if you're interested in public ground. All three of those states have incredibly well-organized and all pervasive public access programs. They're called different things in each state, but they all have a lot of acreage. Kansas has like 1.5 million public acres, for example, and they will go out of their way to help you access that land and succeed at your chosen goal. Kansas, Montana, South Dakota. Not only the good people, the great hunting, and the variety of species, but a whole bunch of other stuff to do when you're not out hunting. Those are my favorites. Now it's time to go to the phones and find out what your favorites are. Yeah, so joining me on the line from somewhere in Colorado, Stan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
So how did your last season go? Let's just get that out of the way, because I'm still looking for some excitement here.
How did my wife?
Your last hunting season.
The last hunting season was good. It wasn't excellent, but it was certainly good. I have no real complaints. It could, you know, it could always be better.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. I had the same discussion a couple nights ago with somebody. I don't know what I'm going to do for an encore, but I'm going to try it again. All right. So what kind of dogs are you running these days?
Scott, I have two German short hairs, both females. I've got a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old.
You like the females?
I do. And it isn't because I have anything against a male dog. For some reason, I just like a female dog, typically a little bit smaller, and I like a smaller dog. My dogs are, probably average 45 pounds. You know, I've got some friends with 70-pound short-haired males, and I like the medium-sized dogs.
Well, I don't blame you, and if I could find some wire hairs at 45 pounds, I'd be all over them as well. Well, yeah. Good for you. So what we're trying to do is keep looking down range, and hopefully this whole kerfuffle over coronavirus will be long gone by the time we are ready to go hunting next fall. And our favorite states for that sort of thing. I've outlined mine already in various places. If you had to choose one state, Stan, where would you go?
Well, right now, and like a lot of you guys, I hunt numerous states, but Montana is a real go-to state for me. I love the country. I think it's beautiful country to walk. You have lots of space to walk in. When I first started hunting there, I'd say maybe 11 or 12 years ago, they had like 8 million acres of walk-in properties. And I think it's down a little bit from that now. But you still got the government land, all of the government lands and state school lands on top of the walk-in. So they're just, you couldn't hunt all of that in a lifetime.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Is there anything in particular you like to chase on that ground? I'm a sharptail fan myself out there.
Well, yes. My goal after the first time or two going up there and really realizing that, hey, this is a trifecta state. No problem. So my goal is Hungarian partridge, sharp-tailed grouse, and pheasants. And pretty much every year I've been able to do that. Last year there was only a couple of Hungarian partridge, but still got the trifecta, even though it was only a couple of them. So it's kind of a neat little goal to set for yourself to get at least one bird of all three.
You ever tried to do that all in one day?
No, I think I've got two out of the three in one day, Scott, but I don't think I've ever got three.
I can't remember doing that either, but I know in one trip over the course of 3 days, we've done that several times on the show. So it can be done, but you'd have to actually like work to do it in a single day, I think.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. So, maybe I'll bump into you out there somewhere. Yeah, without giving us a latitude and longitude, Stan, if you were going to go to Montana and stay somewhere, what would be the nearest town that you would suggest we take a look at for its craft brewery or great restaurant or something like that?
Well, I think I'm probably a little further east in Montana than a lot of folks go to. So there's not a lot of that in my area, but I used to stay in Glendive or Sydney, neither of which are great restaurant or craft beer areas. And I know if you go a little further west, you get into some nice restaurants and those nice craft breweries. But to my knowledge anyway, well, I know Glendive does it. Now, Sydney might have something in that area.
Oh, I doubt it. I know that country just a little bit. I think you got to get a little bigger before you're going to get a brewer. But you can still get a good beer, and that's all that matters. All right. Yeah. Well, good. All good, and I'm already excited because we're talking about a state that's high on my list for this coming fall. Stan, thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation, and thanks for being on the program with me.
My pleasure, Scott. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Okay. Goodbye.
All right, and back to the calls here. George joins me from somewhere over there, West Virginia. Is that where you are, George?
No, Pennsylvania.
But, Yeah.
Just 50 miles south of Pittsburgh.
Okay, I kind of know that country, but not well enough, obviously. So we meet every year at the Mitchell Cabela's store in South Dakota. Am I correct that that might be one of your favorite hunting states?
Yeah, I'd say that's my go-to every year. For some reason, come that time of year, I migrate that way, and that's where I go to.
Literally, it is your go-to state, and that's not an easy drive. How long does it take you guys to get there?
If there's no road construction, just driving, I'd say, to get to the eastern border, maybe, 18 and a half hours, maybe.
Ow. that hurts just talking about it. I don't think it's anywhere near that, even for me, now that I think about it, but it's long enough. But you know, that begs the question then, George, why do you drive that far for hunting?
Oh, wow. It's, I guess a lot of things, you know. It's, first of all, you know, the pheasants. I mean, it's the, you know, the pheasant capital of the world, I honestly feel. It's a lot of things, you know. I mean, like the people. I like farm country. I mean, just the sloughs, you know, seeing the different reeds, the waterfowl, you know, the prairies, the potholes, all that, you know, kind of combined, you know, just all together in one. That's why I go.
It's different than Pennsylvania then in that regard, isn't it? Yeah.
We have where I live here, it's like a lot of rolling hillsides, forests, small streams. And then we do have some state land where they plant for pheasants, and they try to plant, you know, some sorghum, that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's, you know, nowhere close to what South Dakota is.
Well, you're out there right at the opening of pheasant season, which is to many people too late for sharptails. But once in a while, you'll go over to the Fort Pierre grasslands, I think. Have you ever run into many sharpies out there?
Yeah. And normally, like when you hit the pheasant opener, and like I say, you head to the grasslands there for a few days afterwards, or just a few days before, they, you'll see them. They are a little skittish, you know, cause they've been hunted for, their season comes in about 6 weeks before the pheasant opener.
Yeah. Usually.
So it's, I mean, you could still, you know, get on them. I mean, you normally do a little better with the singles, you know, but when you get into, you know, where they're coveyed up, I seen a flock or a covey last year that there might've been 80 to 100 in it, you know, and it, you know, the closest I got was, I don't know, 300 yards to them.
Yeah. They saw you first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. I love it. And love watching the progress of your dog. How's Samson doing these days?
He's doing good. He's growing. We had him out today at some state land. He ran for about an hour and a half, something like that. But we've been working on retrieves lately. We had a swamp we was in the other day working on retrieves. So, you know, just spring starting to roll around. So just, you know, that spring training, getting them ready for possibly a hunt test this spring or summer, if depending how things go.
Well, good. And I wish you the best on that as well. So now our list is two states long, two favorite states with two callers, both on my, well, they're all on my list. It's, you know, it's just that way. George, I wish you the best. Looking forward to seeing you next opener in Mitchell, South Dakota. Until then, take care and stay healthy out there.
All right. Talk to you later, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
And that reminds me, if you're ever headed out to, you know, to that big Cabela's Pheasant Classic they have on opening weekend out there at Mitchell, me and Flick are there at the front of the store. Glad to talk with you. By then, hopefully, my new edition of the book, the first paperback edition of my book, will be out, and I'll sign a copy for you. But you don't have to buy a book. Just come on out. Let's talk about bird hunting and bird dogs. Introduce you to my guy and vice versa. George and I have a tradition. We get a picture of us with our dogs outside of the Cabela store every year. If you want to do that too, glad to help out in that regard. Okay, let's get back to the phones. From somewhere in Denver, Tom joins me on the line. Tom, how you doing today?
I am super fantastic. How are you today, Jim?
I'm trying to keep it's Scott.
I'm sorry.
But that's okay too. Yeah, call me
just
anything.
Got off the phone with him. Sorry about that.
Call me anything except late for happy hour.
There you go.
So we're trying to maintain a positive attitude and look at you know where we're hoping to go next hunting season. So I asked everybody to cogitate on their favorite hunting state. You know, I never put the restriction on it. It could be your own state, but what is yours, Tom?
My favorite state to hunt in is Kansas. And I grew up in Illinois hunting pheasants and quail. And that's really was the only game in town for us, for upland hunters back in Illinois in the northwest corner of the state. So in Kansas right now, we are really enjoying a lot of really good cover, a lot of good crop growth that supplies good food source. We're also having ample moisture, so they've got water. And boy, our quail population out there has boomed, and our pheasant population has been fantastic. So the hardest part of any hunt is picking which gun you want to take out, because you're not sure whether you're going to be banging away at roosters or you know, having a covey of quail busting up in front of you. So that's the biggest challenge, but it's been a lot of fun in the last few years.
You know, it's funny. We made some shows out there last fall, and it was exactly that. Yeah, you know, you never know what's going to come up. No matter where you are out there, anything goes. And it was probably the most fun aspect of it. That kind of idea that you know you got to be on your toes out there. But you said something a couple times that I thought was interesting. You said our season, our birds, et cetera, things like that. Sounds like you've got more than a proprietary interest in Kansas over there, Tom.
Yeah, I and a couple buddies bought a house out there 20 years ago. And it's funny because our boys are pretty young. My son was only 4 years old and my buddy's son was 10 years old. And we bought this little place and we paid a whopping $9,000 for it on an acre of ground in a little bitty town of about 100 people. And it was all ready to go. It was a clean little place, and electricity was working. We had central air conditioning and a furnace that was in pretty good shape. So we thought, boy, we just hit it really, really perfect. And when I went out to look at the property, the guys that had it, that were selling it, took me for a drive around the neighborhood, and they said, hey, you know, when we drive down this dirt road, usually we see, you know, a rooster under these little pine trees on the side of the road. And we drove up there, and sure enough, there's a rooster under those pine trees. And we drove another half mile, and he said, around this corner, there's a little bit of brush right on the corner. And, you know, sometimes we get to see a covey of quail under that pile of brush. And we drove around the corner, and I'm not kidding you, there it was. And I said, you guys set me up on this thing, didn't you? You had somebody come out here and plant all these birds. And we had a good chuckle about that. But the funniest part is that the ensuing years, we had a drought and we were really struggling for birds. So the next 3-4 years, it was pretty tough to find birds. And we had to satisfy ourselves with dove hunting in the fall. It was a lot of fun. Doves are always there. So we had ample amounts of doves in fall and just had a great time shooting doves. And then and turkeys in the spring were still pretty good, even though the pheasant and quail numbers were down. So, but we really enjoyed ourselves. Our sons, what the neatest thing about the whole story is that our sons got to meet the local kids. As soon as our rubber had hit the pavement in our driveway, all the kids in the neighborhood had come running over to our house to play with our kids and our boys. And consequently, we got to meet the locals who were property owners around the perimeter of the town. And before you know it, we were getting permission to hunt private ground throughout that county. And we were just having a great time hunting private ground in Rooks County.
I love it. I mean, these are the kind of stories that I love to hear. I love to tell. I've been lucky enough to experience a lot of them firsthand. It is, it's incredible what, I don't want to be misconstrued here, but rural people are just a little bit different, aren't they, Tom?
They really are, yeah. And they can be a little bit protective.
Sure.
Of their resource. And And it was funny because we didn't bum rush him in any way, shape, or form. The kids developed a relationship with the other kids. And I mean, I'm not kidding you. There were nights where it was 10 o'clock at night and we had 5 and 6 year old kids over at our house at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Kids call their parents and say, "Hey, you know, your kids are still over here at our house." And, "Oh yeah, that's fine. They're good."
Love it. Yeah. You know, I just finished a magazine article for somebody. Who the heck was it? Shooting Sportsman magazine. And I was talking about rural America and all of that. And I wrote something in there about how all you got to do is be honest with everybody and they'll be honest with you. And that's the right way to start that kind of a project, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or if you're lucky enough to have, you know, a youth hunter with you and you can send them up to the front door and have a 10-year-old ask if he can take his dog out and see if he can't find some quail in the draw behind their house. That's money right there. That's
gold. I believe it. Well, good on you. Glad it's worked out pretty well for you. And hopefully we'll all be out there healthy. And I don't know about wealthy and wise, but we're all looking down towards that next goal, which is opening weekend this fall when this whole virus thing is ancient history. Tom, good to talk with you. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation.
Yeah, you betcha. Thank you much for having me. Take care.
And that ought to remind me that I should tell you, I am Scott Linden, your host. I also host the television show Wing Shooting USA. This time of year, the best way to find it is on one of your local television stations. Just go to thewalk.com and you'll find out what stations in your area might carry it over the air, or you can always watch it on YouTube. So, lots of chances to get your fix even when you're cooped up inside. Well, I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that the first three callers listed the first three states on my list of great states to hunt birds in. Patrick is out there in a great state to hunt birds in. I'm really curious, Patrick. It looks to me like you're in, or at least your area code is Montana. Is that going to be your favorite state?
North Dakota is my favorite, but before moving back home, I did spend some time up in Malta.
Ah.
So there was good bird hunting all the way along the High Line there.
Yeah, there is, and there will be, we hope, in the years to come, and we hope we will be able to get out there without having some kind of a virus cop chasing us through the field. But you know, North Dakota might be number four on my list too. Tell me why you like it so much.
Well, I think why I like it and a lot of people like it is it's still one of the few states where if private land's not posted, you can still go out there and walk it. So beyond the plots program and all the state and federal stuff, there's just a lot of places a guy can go walk.
You've been there, you've done that. I've done a little bit of that kind of it. I've stuck to the plots program a lot, and then there's the grasslands down there and things like that. But you ever feel funny just walking onto some guy's field, or is that just something we need to get over?
I grew up here, so it was always part of our fabric. So I don't. I know I've had coworkers come in from other places that kind of, you know, bring that forward, like, man, it just seems weird to go walk on somebody's private land. But as long as that's the law, I would just say get over it and go walk that stuff.
Yeah, we're all big boys and girls. We know what the rule is, and so, you know, if that's the way it is, then that's the way it is, I guess.
Sure.
So how was your season, and give us a description of your best day in the field?
To describe last year, we got a ton of rain all the way through the end of September.
Yeah.
So it was really tough going. Like, we had a really good bird hatch, but a lot of the crops still haven't been harvested. So just getting out to those places was tough. But I think for the guy that was willing to strap on some muck boots, you know, we had some pretty good days out there.
Do you think all of that wet actually damaged the bird populations much?
No, I think they were able to get out in the corn and the sunflowers and the wheat fields. And I'm always hopeful, but I think this year coming up has a huge potential. There's a lot of residual birds, and even if we don't have the greatest hatch, it should be worth doing for sure.
You know, it's funny. I haven't talked to anybody in a position of influence that would know this from a scientific standpoint, but you're right. Just think about it. All of those birds had all that hiding, all those hiding places, and fewer guys actually trying to get out there because they needed hip waders to go. So, right. It should pay off, and that's of course the goal of this podcast today is to get everybody looking at the future and trying to maintain our sanity in the meantime. What kind of dogs you running these days, Patrick?
I've always ran Labrador Retrievers.
I've always contended that if I was going to hunt the Dakotas only, that's what I'd do. It sounds like you've already come to that conclusion.
It's probably just from growing up here when, you know, waterfowl was prevalent. Mm. And then as the pheasants came along, we just kind of transitioned over. But I've hunted with a lot of different breeds, and I really like them all. But for me, I know the lab's the best, so probably going to stick with them.
Love it. And, of course, you must have a favorite color, too, then.
For a long while, it was yellow, but my new troop is black, so I'm starting to become colorblind. I'm looking for more of a skill set.
Okay, an inclusive attitude. That's what we like, even in bird dogs. Good for you, and let's keep our fingers crossed, number one, that we're allowed to go out and actually go hunting this fall, and number two, that your theory about residual birds actually plays out. Thanks so much for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Michael, you're talking to me from somewhere, and I'm not even going to guess anymore. It seems like I guess wrong three quarters of the time. Where are you?
I'm in the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina, a town called Wilkesboro. It's in the western North Carolina.
I'm glad I didn't guess, but good for you. And how are things going out there these days? It's wacky over here on the West Coast. I don't know how you guys are handling this whole thing.
Everything's pretty normal. You know, everything's closed down and everybody's staying home. But other than that, I mean, we grocery stores still have food, just kids out of school, same as everywhere else from what I can tell.
Yeah, well, good for you. Are you allowed to actually get out and walk around and, you know, maybe run your dog if you feel like it?
I've just been going up and down the greenways here.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff, I mean, as far as hunting and all that stuff, is pretty much shut down. And dog training, all the preserves are out of birds. It's the end of that season for us. So, yeah, we're kind of exercising and obedience training around the house. That's about it.
Yeah,
which that'll go a long ways with you. You know what I mean?
Well, and you know, as you say, you know, if that's all you can do, you may as well do it. Yeah, yeah. We're working hard on force breaking right here, and it seems to be moving right along. So I can understand that. What kind of dogs you running these days, Michael?
I have two Bronco Italianos, a male and a female. And then I've got, at Christmas time this year, I got a little Llewellyn setter pup to start messing with.
Let's see.
I guess my mindset was, if you're going to grouse hunt, if you're going to rough grouse hunt, you got to have a setter of some sort. So well, I went down that road.
Well, good on you, and good luck with that. That makes the dog about 4 months old, maybe, at the most. Sound about right?
That's right.
Yeah. What are you doing with that youngster so far?
Working with them on a leash and working with them on a table just to be comfortable with both of those situations where they're not, where the pup's not intimidated, where it, you know, enjoys the training and what it's supposed to be doing.
Good.
And then trying to get out and fire a blank gun over the dog. That's what I did yesterday, just to make sure there's no gun sensitivity or anything like that.
Are you associating the gunshots with a bird in any way? Are you at that? Is that one of your things? I know what some people believe in that.
Yeah, I like to do that. But like I said, kind of things got crazy and I couldn't find any birds late season. So I'm just going out on walks and while the dog's not paying attention, just firing the blank pistol and, you know, kind of not making a big deal about it. And this setter pup that I was shooting around yesterday really did not mind the gunfire at all. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be a problem.
Well, good for you and good luck with that setter and the multinational kennel full of dogs that you have now. Good on you. You're like the United the United Nations of bird dogs.
I know. Well, I got into the Broncos about 4 years ago, and I mean, they are just absolutely incredible bird dogs. People that have never seen one or never been around one, they're kind of gaining popularity. They're really, really nice dogs.
Well, good.
I really have enjoyed them.
All right. Well, we're talking about enjoying our dogs this fall after all of the, you know, the restrictions are lifted. Let's just call it that and keep our fingers crossed. And I asked on Facebook and got incredible response as to your favorite state to hunt. So if you had to narrow it down to one, where would you go?
I'm going to have to go with Michigan on that one.
You know, you may not be the only one, but very few people would answer that question that way. So you tell me more about why Michigan is a great bird hunting state.
Well, okay, so I live in North Carolina, and it's a good state to hunt. There's definitely some good woodcock migration that comes through here. And rough grouse hunting is, it's here, but it's tough. The mountains are really steep. There's really tough walking, beating the cover. So, you know, I wanted to get my dogs on some good wild bird exposure. So I took them to Michigan when they were 2 years old. And then I've been going back ever since just for the sheer number of rough grouse. You know, you can, it's not uncommon to, you know, have an average of 15 flushes a day up there. So I went the Michigan route just to where my dogs got the smell of grouse in their nose and then came back to North Carolina. And that kind of became my challenge was to try to flush rough grouse in North Carolina. So
nice,
you know, Michigan for the numbers and North Carolina for the challenge, I guess is kind of the way I look at it.
Love it. And, without telling us exactly where are you on the Upper Peninsula somewhere, or where do you go in Michigan?
We went to the Upper Peninsula. It didn't really have a lot of birds this year, so we stayed in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. And, you know, just there's a lot more timber cutting in Michigan than there is in North Carolina. They've got a good program up there, so we didn't find it too hard to find some good cuts and find birds.
Nice. And, you know, for a guy who doesn't do much of that, I keep forgetting that it's all about the age of the timber cuts out there. So I'm glad it's working out for you. And sounds like maybe you'll be headed back. You're going to go again this year?
Yeah. You know, my favorite state list is kind of limited because I've only bird hunted in a few states. So I don't know if I'll be going back to Michigan or trying to go after some prairie birds this fall and this winter. I'm kind of thinking I'm leaning more toward that.
Well, I'll tell you, you can't go wrong. You head west, due west from your place. It's a long drive, but there's plenty of prairie birds out there for you. If you do, stop by, see me at the Cabela store in Mitchell, South Dakota on opening weekend. And until then, enjoy your timing, your time with the young dog and good luck. Thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
All right. Thanks, Scott. You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, from across my favorite state from where I am, I think, is Don on the line with me. Don, tell me about your favorite state to visit to bird hunt.
My favorite state, Scott, is Oregon. Born and raised in Oregon, and I've hunted here all my life, quite a number of years, and have enjoyed it immensely. It has a lot to offer, and I've really, really enjoyed the bird hunting here in the state of Oregon.
Well, do you tell me what kind of hunting you're doing in our mutually shared state?
I do, Scott, I do mostly duck and goose. I hunt roosters, not as much as I used to, but I still get out and chase the roosters, and quail, and I hunt doves and collared doves. Occasionally I'll get over for chuckers, although as I'm getting a little bit older, not as much as I would like to.
Yeah, that'll creep up on you. The baseball injuries are reminding me every year.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, if you're doing a lot of waterfowling, are you on the west side somewhere? Is that where you are up there?
I am, Scott. I live near the Portland area, and I hunt out on Sobeys Island and down a little past Scappoose, which is northwest of Portland. And I've done that all my life. I started hunting in 1958. I was very fortunate. I got to hunt with old market hunters when I was a kid. Wow. Ones that hunted over live decoys and no plugs in their guns, and canvas backs were plentiful. Mallards were considered a trash duck, their words, not mine. And they would share how they would take the birds and go to the local hotels in those days. And then they would barter for the birds, and that's how they made their living. And they shot over live decoys. So it was an interesting turn for me when I was young. And then growing up further, we had relatives that lived down in Albany, and we were able to hunt pheasants down there. And I think they were introduced into the North American area, roughly in that area in the 1880s, if I recall.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I've researched that. You're absolutely right. So you actually hunted pheasants on their home turf, literally.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was exciting. They had about, our relatives had about 600 acres down there, and it was just you know, as a kid, as you're 12 years old, yay, this is great. When you look back on it, that was great.
Well, you've done some things, and I don't dare ask how old you are, because I'm respectful of my elders, but this market hunting thing, and, you know, granted, only about 40% of the folks who are listening to this are waterfowlers, but we all probably shoot the occasional duck when we jump one off of a stream or something. But what did you learn about waterfowl hunting from those market gunners that maybe still applies today? Any tricks for us?
And that's a good question, Scott. I was 8 years old when I started in 1958. I have not missed a season since, and I am an elder. I'll be pushing 70 here pretty soon. So anyway, and that includes 4 years in the Navy. I actually made it home for every duck season. That's just the way it worked out.
Wow.
For my 4 years in the Navy. But to answer your question, this one particular individual was my cousin, and he had some of the greatest stories, and I would just hang on every word. And he wasn't one to just tell stories. I mean, these were factual. And how they would, and I'm leading up to your question, how they would they would have hundreds of ducks coming in, because he would have live decoys out quacking in front of him, kicked the front of the blind down. He shot an old Model 97 Winchester hammer, 12 gauge, again, no plug, and go to work on the water and go out and pick up 12, 15, 18, whatever, 20 birds they would get. And I would talk to him about that, and he taught me first of all, patience, along with my father. Excuse me. My father was my biggest mentor when it came to duck hunting. But this particular individual, his name was Fritz. And Fritz would say, when you got birds working, just take your time. They will get here. If they don't, it wasn't going to happen. I remember those words so well. And I've passed that along to my son and those that have come along behind me. And I think they're good words to live by.
Yeah, not just for duck hunting either, by the way.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
The patience still is a virtue, and I'm glad you learned it early on, and you're teaching it as well. I'm fascinated by that whole world, and I was by your story, and in particular, a duck hunter who actually told the truth once in a while. That's not very common, is it?
That was then.
Okay, so you've explained a kind of I don't know what to call it, a baker's dozen, if you will, of species from all over geographically in Oregon, and you know, from getting your, you know, from chest waders to serious hiking boots on our side of the state. You still in love with the waterfowl over all of those, or do the upland birds have a different kind of appeal? Maybe
I I am first and foremost a duck and goose hunter, Scott. Again, I've enjoyed pheasant hunting. I still every year, of course, they have the management has their release program there, and I always pick up a couple cards and go out there and enjoy that win, lose, or draw. And I don't have a dog anymore, so yeah, I don't kick them out as well as I used to, and I might be slowing down a little bit. But duck hunting for me has always been my most, you know, everybody, some people love to ski, some people love to surf, whatever their calling is. But for me, waterfowling, like I said, since 1958 took roots in me, and that's what I enjoy the most when it comes to the outdoors.
Well, there's a zen to being in the blind, cold and wet, and waiting for the sun to come up. I guess I'll never figure that one out, but I'm glad somebody likes it. Well, good, and good to talk with somebody from the same state for a change who votes for us. It's probably, you know, in the top five for me, that's for sure. But
yeah, sure, yeah.
And it's good to talk with you. Thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Scott, thank you for the call, and I just want to just reiterate, I really, really enjoy your shows and all that you offer to the hunters, and look forward to watching them in the future.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Scott. You as well. Bye-bye.
And on that note, wow, I'm flattered. Thank you, Don. I will try and remain humble and a servant of all of the Upland Nation podcast listeners. We're coming to you from the podcast studio of Cabela's and talking about all sorts of great stuff, looking downrange at favorite states for next year, helping you plan. Hold on through the break. We got a lot more callers on the line, some dog training advice, a little bit of everything else in that world, some more things we can talk about when it comes to that. But first, a couple messages from our sponsors. Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, he's feeding it for the last 5 or 6 years, I think, since I met Tim a while back. He's a veterinarian, he's a dog sled racer, and he knows a little bit about making dog food that will support your performance dog. Maybe the best news for newcomers is the 30% discount on your first order. Use the code UPLANDNATION, and they'll ship it right to you and save you 30%. UPLANDNATION at drtims.com. That's drtims.com. Talked last week about some of the functional ingredients that Tim Hunt puts into his food. One would be the prebiotics, including chicory root and psyllium. Both of those feed the healthy bacteria of the dog's gut, and a healthy gut makes a healthy dog, and a healthy dog makes a great bird dog. Learn more about all the variations on the formula at drtims.com. And learn more about how hearing loss is cumulative and permanent at espamerica.com. I know of what I speak. I hope I don't have to yell it to you. The P2i Iridian Nano Coating technology on ESP, electronic shooters protection, hearing protection devices, protects those devices from water damage. It lowers, this is physics, folks, so if I blow it, it's my fault, not Jack Homa's at ESP. The nano coating lowers the surface energy of the device, so instead of water spreading and sticking, it forms droplets that allow moisture, sweat, and humidity to bead up and roll away. And by the way, that also helps them stay in your ear more securely. So you won't lose them in the field, and you certainly won't lose them in the range. So espamerica.com is where you learn more about hearing protection and how to do it the right way. I mentioned our Handle It segment, which is all about dog care and dog training. You get to learn the stuff the easy way because your humble servant, your host, me, learned it the hard way. I'll be talking more about my new Gunner kennel, which has just arrived. And one of the things I've already done is outfit it with the best bedding that I can put in a dog kennel or crate that is going in the back of the truck, and that would be grass hay. Now, if you're not from the country, you may not know that hay is different than straw and that there are several types of hay, Timothy hay being the best grass hay. It breaks down slower than straw and it makes less dust. And both of those are things we don't want our dogs inhaling, and we certainly don't want it in their eyes and up their nose or in their ears or anything like that. So if you've got a kennel and it's an outside kennel for your dog, then consider grass hay. It's also the least likely to be chewed up, swallowed, and torn and spread around the yard. Grass hay is my bedding of choice. And that is our Handle It segment from the Cabela's podcast studio. So here we are. We're talking about our favorite states to hunt because everybody is really pulling for this thing to get over with so we can go hunting this fall. Mark joins me on the line from somewhere up there in the upper left-hand corner of the United States. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So you have some firm beliefs about where we your favorite state. Why don't you elaborate?
The Pacific Northwest is probably one of the, I guess not after the podcast, one of the best bird hunting secrets, best kept secrets, if not in the United States, the world. It's a place where you can shoot multiple species in one hunt, and just by changing, sometimes not even by changing elevation. It's just a wonderful mixed habitat in various parts of the state. And I think we've got, the state of Oregon, even Washington, and I think Idaho too, there's at least two species of quail, two or three species of maybe even four if you count Idaho, because they have for sure have spruce grouse, species of grouse. I haven't quite gotten to the point where I call blue grouse two different species now, dusky and sooty. But, and then you've got pheasants, and of course you've got chukar and Hungarian partridge as well. And in some hunts, you can get almost all of them in one day or one morning.
Wow. So. Yeah, you know, you're right. I never quite thought about it in those terms, but you're absolutely right. There is a wealth of species variety. And then, as you pointed out, and I joke about it, by the third day of a chukar hunt, I'd rather hunt the valley quail that are down on the flat ground. And, and usually it's at the bottom of the chukar hills, so it works out pretty well. And in between, once in a while, you'll shoot yourself a mountain quail. So,
yeah.
If you had to pick one of those birds, anything in particular you would pick?
Oh, I'm a chukar hunter in my heart and soul. To be honest with you, the grouse hunting is something I do until it's chukar season. Although again, I've shot grouse while I've been out chukar hunting too. And of course I consider the grouse, particularly rough grouse, to be the best table fare, but my heart of hearts, it's the chukar hunting. And the Northwest, particularly if you talk about Idaho and even Nevada, I left Nevada out of the first part.
Yeah, let's not mention that state anymore, okay?
Okay. It's, all three states have an enormous amount of public ground, too,
yeah.
So that you don't have to, worry about competing for leased ground. You just go out and walk around to your heart's content. Run dogs over the horizon for days.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, that's why I'm here now. I just wrote 1,800 words for a magazine about why I like it, but why don't you tell us what it is about chukar hunting that you enjoy so much?
For me, it's the openness of it, particularly when I get down, my favorite spot of all, and I don't think I'm betraying anything, since there's roughly 2.5 or 3 million acres, is the Owyhee country, the area, the Oregon, Idaho, Nevada area. And it's just big open country. I've been down there and hunted for 5 days and never saw another person. Probably not smart to go by yourself, but
yeah.
but that said, it's just big, open, rugged, beautiful country, and you know, as bird populations fluctuate, of course, though, in a lot of years you can just be lousy with chuckers. You're talking 15, 20 coveys a day if you know where to look.
All right, and then just for the record, most of that is uphill climbing with the risk of falling off a cliff. There are some mountain lions that certainly would be glad to take a bite out of you, and that's not counting the rattlesnakes and the oppressive heat or the bone-chilling cold. So just trying to put a balance in there, Mark, so that next time I run into you out there, there's nobody else that I run into as well. Okay.
Well, and to your point, it is big, unforgiving country. You know, if you get stuck down in there, you know, if you might be lucky enough to climb high enough to get a cell signal.
Yeah. If you're
generally
really
speaking,
lucky,
if you're really lucky, but it is big, unforgiving country. And that area down there, I think I measured on a map one time, there's an area that's roughly 200 miles north to south and about 150 miles, maybe it's only 100 miles east to west, that has no paved roads.
Yeah, the New York Times said a couple of years back that it's the farthest you can get from a hospital and a Starbucks. And I'm okay with that.
Well, and I believe years ago somebody also commented, and it might have been on an OPB segment, that it is considered to be the most remote area in the lower 48 states.
Yeah, in fact, I've been told that if you look at a satellite photo of that part of the United States, it's the darkest spot in the lower 48, and that's why. So,
and the other thing you have to be cautious about, since you brought it up, is the weather down there. Not so much that it's worse than anywhere else, but it's the roads. You can go from throwing dust in the morning to stuck in the mud by noon.
Yeah,
it's the weather turns
pretty, pretty unforgiving, and there is no roadside assistance out there. In fact, last fall, somebody said, you know. I called the tow truck in Burns, Oregon, and they laughed at me. They're not coming out, and they're not going onto that spot, and they're not pulling me out. They said, wait until spring.
Yeah, no, and I know of one guy from the gun club that got his truck stuck in October and didn't get it out till May.
Yep. Well, that's why we love chucker hunting, everybody. So come on out and join us, and bring your own survival kit. Mark, I love it. It's always fun to talk with you, whether it's on the Upland Nation podcast or anywhere else. Next time we'll be doing it at length off the air. Until then, have a great season. Well, turkey season, that is. And thanks for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. And thanks for letting me share.
So, just a reminder, if you haven't figured it out yet, we're talking about all our favorite states to go bird hunting, and sometimes it's our own home state, and sometimes it's not, which I find fascinating, and I'm learning something from everybody, including, I bet I'll learn something from Roger right now. Where are you calling from, Roger?
I'm calling from southern Minnesota.
How far south is southern Minnesota? I mean, give us a reference point. Are you closer to St. Louis or Minneapolis?
I'm about an hour south of Minneapolis. The next big town would be Mankato.
Okay.
So we're about an hour north of the Iowa border.
And how close is that to Lake Wobegon?
We're surrounded by Lake Wobegon, actually.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And how was your season?
Our season here was pretty good. We were wet here in the Midwest. You know, we started off with a wet spring. In fact, we had the wettest spring in history. We had over 4 feet of rain here in my area, logged for the spring and summer. And then it didn't stop in the fall. A lot of the farmers had a hard time getting their crops out. The ground was real wet. And then, you know, of course, then the snows came. And the guys got the crop out, but it was really a tough year for all the farmers up here. And the rivers were flooded, moved the deer, it moved the birds, it moved the coyotes. So everything kind of got moved to different areas.
Weird.
So it was a real strange year for us.
and you're coping with the self-imposed or the government-imposed restrictions these days, as well as can be expected. But we're looking beyond all that to our favorite hunting states. What would be top of the list for you, Roger?
I would say South Dakota. I used to actually used to live out in your neck of the woods there for about 10 years. I was out in that Sisters Terrebonne area.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really spoiled being here in the Midwest. You know, we're only a couple hours from the South Dakota border, and it isn't that big a drive to get to North Dakota. I have hunted Iowa a lot, northern Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, Montana. So I've got to, you know, get all over in this area. And I would say South Dakota for me is my favorite place. You get out in that prairie pothole region and the waterfowl hunting is fantastic. The upland hunting is fantastic. If you're a coyote hunter, fox hunter, the varmint hunting is very good too. It's just a pretty special place. I mean, I've been very fortunate as a dog trainer for 40 years to work for different clubs and to hunt at different places. And I would say South Dakota for me is really the golden spot in my 40 years of doing this.
Well, yeah, you've been around the block a couple times. You know, a lot of folks gripe about the waterfowl opportunities for non-residents in South Dakota. Give us a little bit of insight there. I know it's kind of a draw thing, but beyond that, how hard is it to get drawn?
Well, the thing with the prairie pothole region, you know, the natural flyway coming out of Saskatchewan and Alberta comes right down between us and South Dakota in that prairie pothole region. Then it works its way into Missouri and eventually works its way down to Louisiana. And it is hard to get a draw. You really should do a lot of scouting maybe a year or two before while you're trying to get a license to get hunting out there. But that Missouri River right there around Chamberlain, you know, if you're not killing ducks or pheasants, you can be walleye fishing. I mean, it's an amazing place. There's a couple of places right there on the river that you pull your boat in and you clean your fish right there. They have cookers right there and on the dock, on your individual docks. And you can go out and hunt pheasants at noon, and you can be walleye fishing in the morning. I mean, it's pretty amazing the things that they're doing out there.
Oh, yeah, and they're taking good advantage of that in the last 10 or 15 years. I was out for the governor's hunt, and we were at a, well, I'll just call it a five-star resort on the banks over there by the, what do they call it, Lake Oahe, up there by Pier.
Right.
And and you could hunt up there at the top. You could play golf halfway down, and then you could even salmon fish down there on the reservoir.
Yep.
And then when you got tired of salmon fishing, you could, like you said, pile out of the boat and hunt all those fingers for ringnecks along there.
Yeah, I took two guys from Sisters, Oregon, in 2012. To that Pier, Fort Pier, South Dakota area. Now, I was living in Oregon at the time, and I talked about the Midwest bird hunting, and they thought it was a bunch of smoke. And I said, come on, guys, we got to go. You know, and it's a long drive out there. If you don't drive straight through, it's going to take you 2+ days from Oregon to get there, unless you drive all day and all night, which we didn't do. And we were able to get on a piece of property just south of Fort Pier on what we call West River. So when you're on the west side or east side of the river, you call it West River, East River. And we, by happenstance, got on this big contiguous piece of ground, and it had not been hunted for over 20 years. And we went into this place. It was like 1940s Les Cuba pheasant hunting pictures. I mean, the pheasants were everywhere. The hay bale stacks were full of them. This particular farmer rancher had a hillside of old international tractors, steel wheel tractors, and horse-drawn equipment, and the birds were standing on the equipment everywhere.
Wow.
And I mean, I blew these guys' mind. We were literally driving up to talk to the landowner on our way in, and the birds were boiling out of the field. They were picking Milo, and they were boiling over, and you had to stop and let them fly over the driveway because they were going to blow your windshield out. You know, now it's not like that in all places, but when you get into those situations, it's hard to explain to somebody that's never experienced that what it actually looks like to see hundreds and hundreds of birds get up out of the field.
You know, and
it's amazing.
I agree. And, you know, early on in my television career, we were in North Dakota and we had some of that. And I come back from a trip like that and I'll tell people, literally, there were clouds of pheasants in the air, and they think I'm yanking their chain.
Yeah, it's that way in North Dakota and pockets too, and you know, you know what hunting around the West and the Midwest is like on a lot of days. I mean, when I went out west and I went on a true chucker hunt up above the Columbia River, and you know, wore out a pair of boots. I mean, that's tough going. But, you know, it's not really a lot of fun to go out and shoot two or three birds in 10 minutes, and then what do you do for the rest of the day? I like to hunt. I like to work the dogs. I like to take the time. On this particular hunt, what made it so special for me that my double gun had a broken firing pin, so it was down to a single shot. And it made it so much more fun because I could still shoot a double, you know, because the birds would just be getting up.
Wow.
And you could take that single shot, break your gun open, take your shell out, drop another shell in, and shoot a second bird. I mean, the birds were just dislike that. It doesn't happen all the time, but it's pretty amazing. So I've been really blessed to be able to experience that. But I've had some great hunts out there in Oregon for chuckers and quail, too. And, you know, North Dakota's great. Montana's great. Nebraska's great. There's really a lot of great places to go. You just have to find the pockets that they're holding birds.
Yeah, and of course, that's you know, what we're trying to do today and get everybody looking towards those and staying optimistic and positive about all of this. And with luck, everybody who listens will run into everybody else who listens at one point or another, and we'll share our notes on the field as well as on the podcast. Roger, great talking with you. I didn't realize you were from out our way, and we'll have to spend some time talking about the good old days down here in the near future.
Yeah, it was the old Deep Canyon Hunting Ranch right out there by Terrebonne, if you remember that place.
I do remember it. I used to go once in a while. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep, that's where I was bunkered down for about 8 years.
Love it. Well, good to talk with you, Roger. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you, Scott. Take care.
Oh boy, it's been an interesting time for everybody. I know that you know, in many states there's a lot more restriction than other states, but we're all kind of keeping our eyes, like I said, on the prize and trying to get it all right so that we can stay healthy, keep everybody healthy, and then go hunting this season. And on the line with me now is Sean. Sean, you're the second caller, I think, from the 503 area code. So you're up maybe western, northwestern Portland, Oregon, maybe somewhere?
Yes, we're in the lovely metropolis of Scappoose is where we live.
In another life, I owned a pair of lederhosen that were from Scappoose.
There's pictures of that, I hope.
Yeah, there are, in fact. Oh my. So the discussion now is about the future and the bright future that we all see next bird season, and states that we would love to go to or return to because they're on our favorites list. What would you put on the top of your favorite bird hunting list?
I'm very fond of western North Dakota. I've got a lot of fond memories. I've had a couple of really good hunts with some great friends out there. In fact, I'm taking two of my friends and one of my sons back there this fall in October. We're going to spend a week chasing multiple species out there, taking a trailer load of short hairs and a couple of pairs of boots and some shotguns, and away we go.
Yeah, you might wear out one pair if you're doing what I think you're doing. Down in that country, there's some interesting stuff. What are the species you'll be chasing?
I'm very fond of Hungarian partridge.
Oh.
I love those birds. And so there's some partridge out there. We will be in some pheasant habitat. And then my son's never shot a sharp-tailed grouse, so we're going to target those and just kind of, And if we're lucky and the dogs are tired, the sandhill crane season is at the exact same time we're going to be there. So we may take a day and let the dogs rest and try our hand at some sandhills just to see if we can do it or not.
I'll never forget the first visit I made to Montana. I was sitting in the parking lot at the Super 8 Motel, and up the road from a great distance at about dusk comes this car with what I thought was the world's largest pheasant tied to the top. Literally, it was like a, you know, a little import car, and it got closer and closer. I thought, man, am I hallucinating or what? No, it was a little tiny Subaru with a giant sand hill tied to the roof.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's been in a bucket list of mine for many years. And if we get the opportunity and the conditions are right, we might just give it a try. We'll see.
Well, good luck on that.
Thank you.
Is there something besides a variety of species that keeps you going to southern, I'm going to say western North Dakota? You said western, and I'm already putting my head down in Dickinson.
Yep. You're in the right neck of the woods. Honestly, Scott, it's the people.
Yeah.
I everywhere you go, they're friendly, and they're willing to help you. And they're like, how you doing? I'll tell you a short story. We were hunting. We went back there. Keepers, we came in about 3 or 4 days after a blizzard, so the hunt conditions weren't great. There was lots of birds, but they were out in the middle of the fields, and you couldn't get to them. As soon as you got out of your pickup, they saw you, and they were gone. So the hunt was tough, and we were filling up gas and taking a break, and some old boy come up and was chatting us up, and he said, yeah, come on out, and he took us to his private tree lot, and he come out with us. And we spent a couple hours hunting his, and we did all right. We got a few birds out of it, but just that gesture, just him. He didn't know us from Sikkim, some guys from Oregon with Oregon license plates, and jeepers, that was pretty neat. It really meant a lot to us. It really did.
That is a common motif I'm hearing, especially in the upper Midwest, but just about anywhere. Somebody sees dogs in the back of your truck, or they see you wearing Blaze Orange. It's almost like, hey, I'm probably okay, and you're okay. And all of a sudden we've broken down a couple barriers. Does that work in any other states you've been to?
Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were hunting that highland country a couple of years, up in Montana, and you betcha, people pull over. We found a house that we could rent for a week. It was there was six of us that went up there, and we rented this house. And every evening, the dad of the landlord would stop by and chat and see how we did and visit with us. And he'd say, yeah, now you want to go over here? This is our piece. And every night, we'd have a new piece of ground for us to hunt the next day. And it was really neat. Just visiting with him and got to know him a little bit and got to know the country a little bit. And pretty soon we started knowing who owned what piece of land. And yeah, it's just, if you smile and look them in the eye and shake their hands, you can go a long ways.
Well,
it really does. You make new friends.
That we've talked about that already. Being honest is you know, number one, a two-way street. Number two, if you are honest, a whole bunch of interesting and usually positive things take place.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Do you ever get down that highway with all the big steel sculptures up there over in that country?
Yep. I've hunted that ground. Yeah, there's that's part of the area I like to hunt. Been there, you bet.
That's
once. We're going back, I think, this like I said, we're going to be up by Williston area.
Okay.
This fall is where we're going to go in October. But we'll see. You know, if the hunt's not good, you move till you find good hunting. And that's what we'll do.
Well, good on you. Be safe. Great to talk with you. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast, Sean.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me. I appreciate what you're doing for us.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Yeah, some of my favorite states. I'm augmenting my list of places that I need to revisit. And there's two that I've just checked on the list that I'll do my best to swing through on my way to all those other states that you're all telling me about. Hopefully you're getting some ideas too, listeners, and hopefully Chad, who's on the line with me now, will also give us a great idea. Chad, what's your favorite bird hunting state?
Probably North Dakota.
Wow, I see a trend developing here. Tell me why.
Wide open spaces, multiple species. I guess just memories too. I've been hunting out there, I think, since I was 14.
Wow.
I believe so. Yeah, I'm gonna be 48 this fall, so I've got quite a few years in.
Well, how about early on in that? Because I'm a late onset hunter. I didn't start hunting until I was about 35. when you were 14, 15, who were you going with, and what did you end up getting to do on those early hunts?
The first time we went out there, it was really, you know, back up, I guess. My dad was invited out on a trip with a friend of his, and they went out and they shot sharptail and Hungarian partridge. And then he came home and he was like, wow, he had never been out there before either. And he had asked the guys, like, yeah, do you mind if I go back out and take my kids to that same area? And he said, well, no, absolutely. Have a good time. So the three of us had went out there, and I think actually a friend of my dad's, a different friend, went with. So the four of us went out there, and there was just birds everywhere. I couldn't hit anything, of course, but I just remember shooting. This would have been, I guess, 1986, and I think, you know, we hunted tree rows for Hungarians, and, you know, every tree row had two coveys of Huns in it. There was, like, must have been the high point, and I know a lot of people have talked about that, the high point of populations out there at that point in time too. So it was just bird after bird after bird. So it was a great time.
Well, it sounds like it. Yeah. Well, you're a lucky guy. Have you been going back to that place periodically? So have you seen changes since you've been visiting for so many years?
Oh, yes and no. Some areas are, you know, exactly as you remember. The one unfortunate thing, kind of especially in the northwestern part, is after the oil boom, there's not a lot of two tracks anymore. So some of the stuff that was pretty desolate really aren't two tracks anymore. So, you know, there's a lot more traffic in some places. There's a lot more posted property, of course, too, because a lot of people, you know, with that many people, there's always a percentage of people that really don't have a lot of respect for the landowners and kind of do what they want. And, you know, unfortunately, they have a negative effect on the other people who do have that type of respect and relations with landowners as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. If you were going to narrow it down to one of the species out there, could you do that?
I like hunting sharptails the best, to be honest with you. I like the big, wide open natural prairie. It's gorgeous. You know, something as native prairie can get. You know, just some of the color, and it's amazing. I love it. We hunt in the we used to stay in Stanley, and we hunted in the big refuge just north of there. And that's, you know, the prescribed burns and the stuff that they do out there, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. So,
loving it. What kind of dogs are you chasing those birds with?
I have Drahthars.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've had them for 10 years now, I believe. Yeah.
Nice dogs.
So, yeah, I like the, you know, obviously, you know, versatility. We do a lot of waterfowl hunting as well. So, you know, I got the retrieve, I got the point. It's kind of, you know, an all around dog. And when I grew up, we had setters. We hunt a lot of rough grouse and woodcock. My dad's from north central Minnesota, so we have a lot of family land up there. I grew up in the woods actually up there on the weekends. So, really familiar with that. But on that very first trip when we went out to North Dakota, my dad's friend had a 6-month-old wire hair at the time. I just fell in love with that dog, you know, shot my first pintail on that trip, and that dog went out and fetched it for me. I'm like, boy, I'm gonna get one of them someday. So
yep. So
when I finally moved out of the city and, you know, had dogs for 11 years now, I believe, again. Yeah, so.
Well, welcome to the club. Oh, I love it. And I'm glad to hear another vote for North Dakota. I think it's a sign. So maybe I'll run into you somewhere out there this fall. Thanks a lot for being on the Upland Nation podcast, Chad.
All right. Thank you for having me. Have a good evening.
So he says off mic, I've been boring my hunting buddies with talk about my favorite states. And I said, you need to get new friends. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott. Really glad to be on.
Well, if you were to kind of lead the discussion around the tavern booth tomorrow night, and the subject was my favorite state to hunt, where would you go?
So that I have to put two places on the list. For me, it's Northwest Iowa, because that's where I'm from, and that's where it all started for me. And I shot my first bird as a teenager in CRP land. So that there's a lot of nostalgia to that. I took a long hiatus from hunting and got back into it about 4 years ago and bagged my first wild rooster in quite a long time back there at a place called Hole in the Wall Lodge in Akron, Iowa.
I know it well.
Oh, have you been?
Yes, we made a couple episodes there 2-3 seasons ago. Yes.
Oh, you know, that's right. Now I recall that. It's they've got a great piece of property and great staff. So
yeah.
Iowa is really nostalgic for me. And the place I'm yearning to go is Montana. Haven't been, and it is a bucket list hunt for me and my buddies, with the combination of just the remarkable scenery, at least as I see it on TV shows, watching hunting, and the opportunity to find a mixed bag of birds. I've not shot a Hun or a Sharpie and would really like to do it.
You can't go wrong. That's where I would go. They're at the top of my list for those species. So, yeah, come on down. I'll see you in Lewistown.
That sounds great.
Yeah, but I'm a little intrigued. This is another theme I'm seeing develop in our discussion on the Upland Nation podcast tonight. By the way, I'm Scott Linden, your host. Thank you for listening. And thank you, John, for being on the call. A lot of people are associating their favorite state with I'll just call it an early hunting memory of one sort or another. So you were out there at Hole in the Wall. Was that kind of one of those, what do I call it, peak experience?
Yeah, it was. It was it was the thing, one of the things that really got me back into this. I had been to some preserves here, and it was just, it kind of aligned the stars for me of memories with my grandfather and my father. You know, the scenery and the CRP in Western Iowa, and it just kind of locked a lot of things together. And the piece that they also had really great dogs, and they had a variety of dogs. They had some flushers, some pointers, some labs, some short hairs, and it was the whole package. And it drew me back to my childhood, and it's just hard to pull that out of my memory.
Boy, that is the full meal deal there. You know, the only gripe I have, I think that county is dry.
I don't know about that, Scott.
I'll tell you a funny story. So we're going to meet one of our sponsors there. We're hunting with one of our sponsors at Hole in the Wall. Great place, by the way, everybody. And he gets there before we do, and we're still in South Dakota headed his way, and he says, "Stop, turn around, find a liquor store." And I said, "Why?" He says, "You can't buy anything in this county." So we did. We turned around, and we went into, believe it or not, in some little town in South Dakota, we found a city-owned liquor store.
Really?
Okay, so that, I mean, both of those things were just, to me, foreign experiences. But we had a great time, and Joe and his crew at Hole in the Wall, turns out we didn't have to stop anywhere. They had plenty for us.
Oh, they do. His bar is pretty stacked. I can attest to that.
And as you said, the incredible habitat out there. I had never seen a beaver dam made out of corn stalks until I went to Hole in the Wall Lodge in Akron, Iowa.
I think that's an Iowa tradition, Scott.
Get out of town. You've seen them then. You know.
Oh yeah. I grew up out there, so we've seen that before.
That was cool. And the whole experience was like that. And the friendliest barn cat I ever met. She's actually been on the Facebook page a couple times.
Yeah. Well, one piece of advice I'll give you, they'll feed you well at Hole in the Wall, but if you're looking to venture out, there's a steakhouse in Lamar's that they can point you to that is, I venture to call it world famous. It may or may not be, but it is absolutely terrific, called Archie's.
Archie's. So Okay.
Archie's Wayside in Lamar's, great place to grab a steak after a day of hunting, and they can point you in the right direction, if not, take you there.
You know, it's funny. I think I know it because I think we drove through town one evening or afternoon, and there were cars filling up both sides of the street.
Yeah, you've got to get early. Get there early, excuse me, because it is a popular spot, but they've got cold beer at the bar, too. To tide you over.
Well, that gets me interested right there. John, great to talk with you. Wonderful memories. And glad you're back and part of the club again. Thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Hey, thanks a lot, Scott. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that'll probably put a capper on the calls. It's an extra long special edition of the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. Thanks for listening. Still got some more to talk about, including the This Land Is Your Land public access feature. But in the meanwhile, let me take care of a little business here. Gunner Kennels, our newest customer, if you will, our newest sponsor. Gunner.com is where you learn more about their 5-star rated dog crates. One of the things I like most about mine, escape-proof door system. It's custom welded, power coated, and reinforced with an aluminum frame. I tell you, you couldn't even get Harry Houdini to get out of this thing. There's a full-length stainless steel piano hinge, and the hexagonal door design keeps paws in, while backup safety latches provide extra defense. I challenge your dog, my dog, both dogs put together, they will not get out of that Gunner kennel. Learn more about all the products at Gunner.com, including their new financing program. And I cannot say enough about the reasons I love my Dogtra TNB dual collar. One more just for you, 10% discount on any purchase over $200 or on and in addition, free shipping on anything over $200. Just use the code SLUN10 at checkout. The TNB Dual to me is probably the simplest operating, training, and locating collar I've ever seen. And the reason is you can run two collars, hence the name Dual, but you don't have to toggle back and forth. You don't need to rely on bare fingers in cold weather touching a touch screen to move from one dog to the other, one collar to the other. There's two sets of buttons. It's a no-brainer. Take it from one who has no brains. Learn more about the March bundle deals and everything else, including the discounts, with the code SLUN10 at Dogtra.com. Yeah, this land is your land. This land is my land. You know the rest. And it is brought to you by my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. Seems like we've got a lot of great bird hunting spots being talked about on the podcast today. And thank you all, everybody who's number one listening, everybody who's contributing their advice on favorite states. That's what it's all about around here. Community, sharing, and helping each other out. You go to findbirdhuntingspots.com. You could win a shotgun. Just sign up for the mailing list. And here's my advice. If you are hunting public access ground, whether it's publicly owned or privately owned and open to walk-in hunting, be smart, be strategic. Pick a number of spots on the map that are close to each other. That way, when you go to one and it doesn't pan out, or somebody beats you to your first choice, you can go to the next one, or the next one, or the next one. And if one of those is flooded, you can go to the next one. And if one is closed because the road is out, you can go to the next one. Spend more time hunting, less time commuting, with a strategic approach. One quick reminder, and if you can't hear me very well, turn up the volume, because I'm going to suggest that you go to Electronic Shooters Protection and their website, espamerica.com. Learn all about why I wear my hearing protection devices in the field as well as the range at espamerica.com. Yeah, it's been a long podcast. Thank you for sticking with us. I hope you learned something. Maybe put some other state on your bucket list for next season. We will be hunting. We will be healthy. Our friends and our family will be healthy, and maybe they'll be hunting with us. That was the goal. I hope we accomplished it. If you enjoyed the podcast, please thank you. Tell your friends and rate or review at wherever service you are getting your podcast. That'd be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or one of those. If you'd like to talk with us, go to the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page. I check them both regularly. And take a moment to thank everybody for being cooperative, considerate, and take care of yourselves out there. Stay healthy. Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Linden.